I called Paul at his lab and arranged to meet him outside the Metro front entrance. The little guy was actually quivering with excitement as he stepped out of the cab.
Are they ready? Will we be able to go right in?
He moved past me at a rapid walk.
Whoa, hold up there for a second, Professor.
I turned and caught him by the arm as he hit the first step.
Lieutenant Monahan asked to see me in his office. From there, I'm pretty sure he'll be more than anxious to get your input into this case.
I had understated Monahan's attitude toward Paul's input. He looked like a drowning man grabbing for a hand out of the water when he saw Paul. He reached out to take Paul's hand.
Professor Verona, you don't know how glad I am to see you. Maybe you'll be able to shed some light on things around here.
Thank you, Lieutenant. When can I view the bodies?
Let me check on that.
There he is!
Rorsch. Monahan put the phone back on its cradle and watched as Rorsch limped towards his office. Rorsch was sporting a nasty shiner, a donut around his neck, and had a sling holding his right arm.
Lieutenant Rorsch, what in the world happened to you?
Rorsch glared and limped into Monahan's office.
You know very well what happened, crud. You did it.
What's going on here? Are you accusing this man of assaulting a police officer?
I noticed he managed to say police officer without gagging when speaking of Rorsch.
You bet I am, Monahan. This crud attacked me without provocation twice. He did this 3 nights ago while I was working on a case in the Tenderloin.
Nope. Sorry. I would love to take credit for that, but I have several witnesses placing me in the emergency room that day from about noon on. From there, I spent the next few days in my apartment. Rorsch had overstepped his accusation and used the wrong time frame. He tried to backtrack anyway.
I meant morning, not night. It's the pills! They're messing with my concentration. You attacked me in the morning.
Yeah, and the next thing you'll say is you were attacked by a vicious cross-dresser.
Get out of here, Rorsch. You're not only embarrassing yourself, you're embarrassing the department.
Enjoy it while you can, Mandolin. I'm gonna nail your hide if it's the last thing I do.
What do you know about that, Mandolin?
Me? Nothing. Nothing at all. Weren't we going to go down to the basement? A huge smile spread across Paul's homely features.
Yes, let's. I can't wait to examine those wounds.
It takes all kinds, and then some. Ignatova met us at the morgue door. Paul pushed past me.
Do you have any more of those, Doctor?
She blinked and then looked at Paul as if the leading man had just come on stage.
Sure. Call me Ursula.
Neither one of them reached for the donut box. I could almost hear the violins playing as the doc and Paul stared wetly into each other's eyes.
Doctor? The body?
Ignatova continued to stare into Paul's eyes.
Hey, Paul. Wanna see the body?
What? Oh, yes. Where is it?
Paul's attention diverted partly from Ignatova, but I could see his whole heart wasn't in it. Ignatova turned and swept across the room to the autopsy table. She pulled back the sheet, exposing the upper torso and the arms.
As you can see, there are few similarities to our earlier guests.
I'd say. The girl could have fit into the Driver family with no one being the wiser. Her hair was close to the same length and color as Roxanne and Randy's. She had the same pouty lips and looked to be about the same in height and weight. My gaze traveled to her arms. Ignatova had the wrists turned so that the inner elbow showed. The same track marks discolored the skin. To the casual observer, this girl would appear to be a needle jockey. I could also see some sort of residue around the marks, like something had dried there. Paul reached into his pocket and pulled out a jeweler's loop. He bent to examine the wounds. Ignatova sidled up to me.
Is he married?
Paul? No, he's not married, unless you can consider test tubes and microscopes as life partners.
Really? Interesting.
Where did you find her, Pat?
Another alley. This one off Buchanan near Sacramento.
That's not too far from Lafayette Park.
Yeah.
In Pacific Heights, they even scrub the alleys. I would bet half Lucchesi's retainer this redhead came from that neighborhood.
So, we have another similarity. financial status.
Yep.
What do these girls have to do with Palmetto?
The question is, what do you have to do with Palmetto, Mandolin? There's word out that you're looking into that Crumb's murder for Lucchesi himself.
I had already practiced my innocent look on Rorsch. Now, it was time for an award-winning performance.
Oh, well then you know more than I do, Lieutenant. What am I supposed to be doing? Have I found out anything?
You're a real ass, Mandolin. Do you know that?
Every day, Lieutenant. Every damn day.
Ignatova and Paul bent over the corpse, their heads nearly touching. She was holding back a flap of skin as he worked at something with a scalpel.
This doesn't look right, Ursula. No, this isn't what I thought it was at all.
Does it make a difference, Paul?
Nerds in love. Ain't it wonderful? Paul reached out and snagged one of the petri dishes off the side table.
Oh, yes, definitely. This material bears no resemblance to the toxic mold I was expecting.
He tapped the scalpel on the edge of the dish.
No, this is unlike anything I've ever studied. May I use your microscope?
She beamed and led him over to that part of the lab as if leading him to her boudoir. Paul placed a portion of his scraping onto a slide and positioned it under the microscope. He worked at the controls for a few seconds.
What's wrong, Paul?
What did you see?
Paul backed up, and Ignatova moved past him to look herself.
I have no idea what I'm looking at. It actually looks like some form of coagulated saliva.
Something funny?
Vampires! It's like a fantasy come to life!
Vampires?
Vampires? What the hell is going on, Doc? What do you mean by vampires?
I mean just that. Vampires, or a close approximation to the fable. This is composed of a mixture of saliva, anticoagulants, and some sort of biotoxin we can't identify.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me those aren't track marks at all? Are you telling me that a beast out of a horror novel bit every one of these girls and not one of us noticed that?
It's interesting how people tend not to notice what they say when they're on a roll. Ignatova had no explanation as to how everyone in the police department, including her, missed a tiny detail like the phony track marks. Paul, not being an expert in the ways of the undead, went back to his molds and fungi, along with every bit of contact info Ignatova could stuff into his pockets. Just to be sure, Monahan had Ignatova run a full analysis for illegal drugs on all the victims' blood. They all came back clean. Monahan grumped his way back to his office, and I headed for a hot pastrami and a cold brew. The next item on my to-do list was a little chat with Fats Muller. If anyone had a handle on the whereabouts of Toots Garber, it would be Fats. A few of my street contacts headed me in the right direction. Because of Lucchesi's large ass, I greased their palms a little heavier than normal. It never hurts to keep the pipeline well lubricated. I found Fats standing outside one of the eateries in the Italian Quarter, just a couple blocks inland from the wharf. He was laughing with a couple more boys from the Lucchesi family. A cheap-looking brunette hung on his arm. I could just about make out the price tag on her from where I stood. Quickening my steps, I came alongside Fats and took him by the arm.
Sorry, boys and girls. Mr. L wants to have a talk with this fellow.
My blatant lie worked, and no one followed as I dragged Fats down the street by his arm. I made almost a full half block before he noticed who had hold of his arm.
Mandolin!
He tried to jerk free, but I held tight, digging my thumb into the nerve next to the funny bone.
Let go of me! What the hell do you think you're pulling?
I continued to drag him along.
Hey, Mandolin, I had nothing to do with that broad's death. You gotta believe me, man, nothing!
What broad are you talking about, Fats?
I yanked him into the next open door. It was a small sandwich shop. I shoved Fats into a chair and nodded at the girl behind the counter.
We need to think about our order for a bit.
She shrugged and went back to listening to her earplugs while working away at her gum. Fats looked at me, rubbing his elbow as his face drained of all color.
I heard you was working for the boss.
he meant Lucchesi, whispers traveled through the underworld faster than soccer mom gossip.
This is a hit, isn't it? The boss found out and he hired you to do the job.
His hand inched toward the lapel of his coat.
Move that hand an inch further, Fats, and you'll find out for sure.
It wasn't quite a lie. Technically, it was the whole truth. He would find out I wasn't Lucchesi's hitter, but it was healthier to let him believe otherwise. My luck held. Fats's hand dropped into his lap and he deflated. Jeez, I can't stand a man who bawls like a baby.
Fats, calm down. Seriously, stop. Snap out of it, Fats. You give me what I want to know and I'll let you go.
This time, I wasn't lying. I really had nothing against Fats, other than his choice of profession. He looked at me as though I had just delivered his first child.
Really? Gee, thanks, Mandolin. You're a right guy, you know that?
Yeah, I'm a real peach. Talk, Fats. Enlighten me. You said something about not being involved in that broad's death, Fats. Who are you talking about?
Palmetto's girl, that's who. Brandon was banging one of the driver chicks. Old man driver and Mr. Lucchesi go way back. Everybody knows that. The boss is pissed because me and Brandon got into it a couple of weeks ago, right after you messed with Walt. Brandon didn't like the lieutenant. Thought Walt was going to try and make time with Randy. Brandon had it wrong, but he wouldn't listen.
You think Rorsch killed Palmetto?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Brandon was a hothead. He slammed out of the boss's office saying what he was going to do to Walt. Poor kid didn't stand a chance.
Obviously, but I couldn't picture Rorsch acting in self-defense. Not when an ambush was so much easier.
What's this about Lucchesi finding out? Find out what?
He edged closer. We were brothers now, working for the same strict but benevolent father.
The shipman, of course, you know. The boss heard about a whole ton of China White coming in the port. It's hidden in a false wall in a container. He must have found out that the driver chick was mixed up with Schultz. I heard about it when Walt was warning Brandon to keep his date's mouth shut. Brandon didn't take it well.
And that argument continued in Lucchesi's office?
Yeah, like I said.
And you think Schultz ordered the hit on Randy Driver? What, did Palmetto get cut in the crossfire?
I don't get you.
That's all right, Fats. Go on, get out of here.
Most of what Fats told me just muddied the waters. Could it be that the girls were just hapless victims of a gang war? No. In fact, a very large hell no. What would a young woman from Pacific Heights have to do with a gang war? Nothing. That's what. No. If there was a connection, it was loose at best. There had to be another link. True, all three girls had been made to look like 10-cent whores with lifelong habits. I needed more answers, and those track mark wounds created even more questions. Questions I had not even thought of were cropping up faster than I could answer them. Much as I didn't like it, it looked like a visit to Mr. Schultz was in order.
What?
It was the perfume that warned me, unfortunately, not soon enough.
Tony! Tony!
Two thick arms wrapped around me from behind, and a wet kiss planted itself onto my left cheek. I wriggled away and turned, wiping the lipstick off with my hand.
Gah! Frankie! What the hell are you doing down here?
The Italian quarter was a good 12 blocks from his stomping grounds. Frankie winked. This time he was wearing a flowered shift with matching purse and sensible shoes. A silk scarf was thrown loosely around his neck.
Oh, a girl's got to expand her horizons, lover. How else am I going to keep my eyes on you?
I moved back a bit further. It wasn't so much the scent of the perfume he wore. I'd smelled it before, somewhere, and it could be a pricey one. But the amount. My eyes were watering.
I've told you before, Frankie. I don't swing that way.
Ooh! Tony, you are such fun. No. I am actually doing some shopping.
He reached into his purse and pulled out a wig, working it onto his head.
What do you think?
I blinked. The hair was the same color as that of the driver twins.
Tony! Tony, Tony, what do you think?
Nice, Frankie, real nice. It works on you. Frankie preened a happy puppy.
Oh, thanks, Tony. That means a lot. I mean, a girl has got to have her strokes, you know. Oh, I also picked up a few special odds and ends along with some wonderful makeup. The contest is coming, you know. Oh, did you hear about that poor girl in Pacific Heights?
Yeah, I heard about her.
Oh, so sad. Oh, this city is becoming just too dangerous for a girl these days. Ooh, ta-ta, Tony. I will catch you on the rebound.
He walked off, exaggerating the swing of his hips. Chewing my lip in thought, I watched Frankie swagger away. Something weird was going on with my favorite cross-dresser. The only paper he read was The Advocate, a South of Market gay rag. The death of a hetero Methodist in Pacific Heights wouldn't rate a line in the classifieds in that paper. The big guy was becoming a little too interested in my goings-on and in my opinions. A 300-pound stalker I did not need. They should have immortalized Rupert Schultz's Hunter's Point office as a set from an old black-and-white movie. I had prepared for a hard time trying to see the old man. My name wasn't exactly a household word among the city's basement dwellers. To my surprise, the twin slabs of beef guarding the entry to Schultz's den just nodded at me and stepped aside. The city's number two mobster glared at me from beneath white, bushy eyebrows, desperately in need of mowing. The thumb-thick cigar clamped between his teeth jutted out to his left. Though he was a banty rooster in physical size, Schultz had the power to back up his inflated ego. An old black rotary dial phone occupied the left-hand corner of the desk. In front of the phone, several bundles of $100 bills were stacked. Schultz's monopoly money, I guessed. Schultz grabbed one of the stacks and flipped it toward me.
Take it and get out. Tell your boss I don't want no trouble, see?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Then I'm just a guy that sells aspirin. Pull the other one, Mandolin. It's got bells. Word's out that you're Lucchesi's fair-haired boy. Not even that crooked cop Rorsch can lay a hand on you. Some of the boys saw what Lucchesi's muscle did to him. Save your breath. It ain't gonna fly down here. Take the money and tell Lucchesi we're even. My organization didn't have anything to do with drivers' daughters, and we didn't whack that Pacific Heights girl either.
What can you tell me about Rorsch? What's his connection to Driver?
Oh, you think Rorsch is the one doing the killings? Don't waste your time, Mandolin. He's too busy making time with Lucchesi's arm candy. You can tell your boss that for me, too. Call it an extra favor, no charge.
You haven't mentioned Brandon Palmetto. Who shotgunned that big hole into his back?
I toyed with the stack of bills, using a fingertip to push it Schultz's way.
Don't know. Palmetto was doing a favor for my business. I don't whack people who do me favors.
Schultz was one of the old-timers, all right. Right down to his toes.
Thanks.
I turned around to leave and didn't stop.
Mandolin!
Have someone else deliver the money to Lucchesi, Schultz. He doesn't know it, but I've just resigned.
You've reached the Mandolin Detective Agency. We find things. All of our investigators are currently hot on the trail, but if you leave your name, number, and a brief message after the beep, we will return your call.
Mandolin? You there, Mandolin? It's Pat. I swear, if you're just sitting there and not answering, I swear I'll... Son of a bitch. Better not be avoiding me. Look, we've got another one.
Pat, is it what I think it is?
You bet. She could be related to the others. Right down to the phony track marks.
Where was this one found?
You know the artist colony at Hunter's Point?
Yes.
Figured you did. You've had dealings with a couple of Schultz's boys in the past. Well, this girl was no hooker any more than the one in Pacific Heights. They found her in one of the lofts. Seems her parents own a number of the buildings there. They let her use the loft as a studio.
What type of painting did she do?
Don't know. You think it might be relevant?
About as relevant as her smell.
Whoa, What's that got to do with anything?
Humor me. Smell her.
She's a goddamn corpse.
What's your point?
You're disgusting, Mandolin. Do you know that?
It's one of my best traits. Check her smell, Monahan, and call me back. You won't be sorry. Hello?
Okay, Mandolin. How did you know?
How'd I know what?
Don't give me that. I'm not in the mood. Ignatova recognized the perfume on this girl. It was the same one that was found on the other three victims.
Bingo! Give the men a prize.
Mandolin.
Sorry, I just got back from a little chat with Rupert Schultz.
You did what? Tony, are you really working for Anthony Lucchesi?
Not anymore. He hired me to find out who killed his nephew. I have to tell him I'm dropping the case.
Could be dangerous. You want me to come along?
I almost took Monahan up on that offer. A cop standing at your shoulder could be a real asset when dealing with certain folks.
Mr. Mandolin, Mr. Lucchesi is expecting you.
Even Lucchesi's doorman thought I was a member of the family. I had to unload that impression ASAP. No one gave me the fisheye as Smithers led me through the mansion to Lucchesi's drawing room. Good old Mandolin, a real made man. I felt like throwing up.
Mr. Mandolin, how good to see you.
Lucchesi waved at me from his easy chair. He did not get up. I could see why. The same luscious bit of eye candy that cuddled up to Rorsch at the somersault was sitting right across from him. She turned and gave me that same slow, sexy smile Roxanne had way back when. Mr. Libido woke up. Down, boy.
Genevieve, please say hello to Mr. Anthony Mandolin.
Nice to meet you.
I clapped Mr. Libido in irons and nodded. The same, Miss...
Just a Genevieve.
I forced my gaze from their feast and turned to Lucchesi. I have to return your retainer. He stood up and walked over to the window.
I don't understand. Are you unable to perform your typical work?
I pulled out the check. No, I can do the work. I just can't handle the connections that come with it.
Connections?
Connections. I figured he knew my meaning. It had been him, or those under his direction, letting the rest of the city know that I was on his payroll.
I see. You are an interesting man, Mr. Mandolin. Money will motivate you, yet you cannot be bought. What would you say, Mr. Mandolin, if I refused to accept my retainer back?
I'd say you were wasting your money. I won't cash that check. I can't afford to.
You are free to do so, of course. If I am any judge of character, you will continue to follow your instincts, and I will eventually learn the name of my nephew's killer. Take the money, Mr. Mandolin. You will earn it, regardless. Besides, your treatment of Lieutenant Rorsch has already paid dividends.
I shook my head. Too many people in this town knew what made me tick. Perhaps it was time to change occupations. What I was about to do next turned my stomach. Will you do me a favor? I could feel the acid boiling already. Lucchesi struck a pose, the image of the benevolent monarch.
Of course. All you need to do is ask, Mr. Mandolin. What would you have me do?
Call off your boys. I do not want anyone to have the idea I am on your payroll. I'm an independent contractor, and that's all. I do not work for you. I do not work for the police. I work for me, on my own terms. Got it?
Lucchesi held up a hand, shaking his head. I looked up just in time to see the doorman take his hand away from the lapel of his coat.
A point well taken, Mr. Mandolin. But I will not be releasing you from your own moral obligation, nor will I be voiding this check. As I said, left free to your own devices, you will solve this mystery and you will earn my retainer.
I don't...
Please, please, there's no need for argument. I will, however, send word that you are a free agent and not in my employ. Will that suffice?
It sufficed, because I knew I had no other choice. Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Make no mention of it, Mr. Mandolin. You are already halfway there, if my information is at all accurate.
I managed to keep my mouth shut. Lucchesi had more confidence in me than I did. All I really had was an assorted pile of conflicting crap that might be information. That is, if I could dig through it enough to find the hidden gems.
I headed back to my office. Something Lucchesi said niggled at me. What was that bit about Rorsch? Frankie was the one who had given the slug his lumps. I saw him do it. Maybe Lucchesi thought I was the one who did the deed. Rorsch certainly did. In spite of the twinges from my conscience, I decided not to contest the opinion.
This is a call for Mr. Anthony Mandarin.
The answering machine in my office showed several messages. I decided not to take up the offers to give to a variety of police charities or to buy into a can't-miss insurance opportunity. The last phone message was one I had never dreamed of getting.
Mr. Mandolin, my name is Randall Driver. We need to meet. I'll send a car.
Thank you for agreeing to see me, Mr. Mandolin.
Randall Driver looked exactly like his newspaper photos. Urbane, cultured, self-assured, and handsome. I disliked him immediately. The man's office overlooked the city from atop the Driver Tower, a nice, compact office building that stood 30 stories above the Transamerica Pyramid. Ceiling-to-floor windows added to the view. Unlike Lucchesi's dark wood, Driver preferred clean lines and light colors. The place was so well coordinated, it made me itch.
Why the message?
Because you were one of the last people to see Roxanne alive, and I have received word that you are working with the police and others on seeking the killer of my daughters.
Sounds about right, but that's not the whole story, is it?
You're an extremely perceptive man, Mr. Mandolin. In some occupations, that can be a dangerous attribute. In your line of work, I would think it a necessity. You see, Mr. Mandolin.
Call me Tony, or Mandolin. This Mr. stuff gets old real fast.
Very well. Mandolin it is.
Driver leaned forward on his desk. He and Lucchesi came from opposite ends of the same cloth.
I want the one who killed my daughters, Mandolin. In spite of the empire I built, I made sure I was there for them as a father, especially after their mother passed away. I want to look that bastard in the eye and let him know it will be my finger pushing the switch when he dies.
I didn't say a word. In California, Driver was one of the few men who could make that happen.
You have no opinion on that, Mandolin?
Not really. I get paid to find things. I don't usually ask why. I can understand you wanting to be the one pulling the lever, pushing the switch, or dropping the axe, for that matter. Other fathers wouldn't be concerned about doing it legally.
I had considered that option. Exacting revenge can be an extremely expensive business. I can't afford to give up my freedom to do so.
I see. But all this still doesn't answer my original question. Why the message? If the police find this killer, you'll get your wish. I won't have anything to do with that. I don't carry a badge. Never have.
Driver stood and beckoned me to follow him. He walked through a door disguised as a portion of the paneling and led me down a hall notable for its lack of any interesting feature. The hall opened into a room that looked more like a bank vault than an office. As I took a second look, I realized it was a bank vault. Driver pushed a button and then stood still as a greenish beam played across his face. The vault door swung open. The armor behind the paneling had to be at least 4 feet deep. Driver waited for the door to stop and then walked inside. I stayed where I was. I did not want to be seen by any of the hidden cameras entering Driver's personal vault. Driver came out of the vault carrying one of those horse-choking wads of bills various rich folks had been tossing my way lately.
Take that. It is yours, whether or not you find the one who killed my girls.
I looked at the top bill. Ben Franklin looked back at me. He seemed to be my client's favorite founding father these days.
I haven't earned this, Mr. Driver. Roxanne paid me to find Randy. That commission has already been settled.
You earned Roxanne's commission, not mine. I've been told about your dealings with certain individuals who are not above flaunting the law to achieve their aims.
Listen,
Please let me finish. Antonio Lucchesi is used to taking the law into his own hands. I don't want whoever killed my daughters to escape his day in court by dying. And I'm sure that Mr. Lucchesi is intent on that event happening. He has little regard for the efficiency of law enforcement.
I looked at the bundle of bills in my hand, thinking, so do I.
You want me to go up against the mob? I don't think even you can pay enough.
Look, Mandolin, take the money now. You've earned it, in spite of your misgivings. Besides, I will never miss an amount that small.
I held the price of a top-of-the-line Mercedes in my hand, and he called it pocket change.
Look,
he pushed a button, and the vault closed.
The matter is closed, Mandolin. In addition, I would like to ask you a few more questions. Will you agree to meet me at my house this evening? I'll send a helicopter to pick you up at 6.
Just like that? Done deal. My opinion on being picked up was neither needed nor wanted. There's a place on the southwest side of the Marin Headlands called Rodeo Lagoon. The Driver estate had a private dock on the far eastern shore of the lagoon. The family heliport sat on a rise overlooking the dock. The mansion itself, nearly double the size of Lucchesi's, occupied most of the foothill above that. At a rough guess, I would have to measure the house by acreage rather than square feet. I'm sure the view over the Pacific Ocean over the headland didn't hurt the appraisal. The pilot did not occupy me to the house, nor did anyone come out to meet me. I pushed the button for the doorbell, but heard nothing. The guy who opened the door was at least as large as Frankie. An older black man, he towered over me in the typical garb of a butler. From his features, he could have been Frankie's dad. Hell, he sure had Frankie's build. There was more gray than black in his hair, but he held himself with the self-assured poise of a man who knew how to take care of himself.
Mr. Mandolin, I presume. This way, please, sir. Mr. Driver is in the sitting room.
He waited for me to pass through the door and closed it. The butler marched down the hall. As I shambled along behind, I was struck by the feel of the place. Driver seemed to like things clean, modern, and of the best quality. Driver's sitting room, however, was anything but cozy. I had lived in 2-bedroom houses that were smaller. The butler led me across the ballroom-sized floor to where Driver sat, reading a paper. An extremely expensive-looking lamp of gold and crystal stood next to his wingback chair. A twin of the chair sat to the other side of the lamp. The butler stopped precisely at the edge of the carpet that defined the area where Driver sat.
Mr. Mandolin, sir.
Thank you, Francis. That will be all for now.
Driver waved a hand at the other chair.
Sit down, Mandolin. Would you like a brandy?
Not right now, thanks.
We stared at each other for a couple of seconds, and then Driver put down his paper, folding it neatly, and placing it on the small side table to the right of his chair.
So, straight to business. I respect that. I was hoping to pick your brains, Mandolin. You were, as I said, in many respects, the last person to see my daughter Roxanne alive, other than the one who took her life.
I suppose I was. She was intent on finding her sister. There was something going on in Randy's life that had Roxanne scared. As it turned out, she was right.
Tell me about your conversation with her.
I held nothing back. He listened, nodding occasionally, and when I finally ran down, he sat there, his fingers steepled before his mouth.
Why couldn't she go to the police?
She didn't say, but since Randy was seen leaving the bar with Lucchesi's nephew, I've got an idea.
Tell me.
I told him about Rorsch, including Frankie spotting Randy and Rorsch together. I even threw in my suspicions that Rorsch was playing both sides of the street, and that somehow his daughter's deaths tied together. Driver reached into the small drawer set into the table and pulled out a notebook.
What you've told me checks with what I've been told by others, Mandolin. This Rorsch, he is a police lieutenant, correct?
Yep.
Then perhaps Roxanne felt that she would find less than a sympathetic ear if she took her concerns to the police because of this lieutenant.
Yeah, perhaps.
I wasn't so sure. Randy's fling with Brandon Palmetto figured into this beyond Rorsch's involvement. My little conversation with Fats rebounded off what Schultz had told me. I tended to believe the old man more than Fats. Toots Garber pulled the trigger on Palmetto. I was sure of it. Whether he did it with old man Schultz's blessing was another thing altogether. The hitch in my whole chain of events was the phony track marks. Neither Toots, nor Fats, nor even Rorsch would have the know-how to create them. And if Ignatova and Paul's estimation was... my brain shut off right there. My next step would have to be Toots, even if just to mark him off the list. I looked back at Driver.
I've got some more answers I need to gather in, if you don't mind.
Not at all, Mandolin. Francis will see you out.
He touched a control on a small silver remote. The butler came into the room almost instantly.
This way, please, sir.
I got up and followed. As we walked down the hall toward the front door, I glanced out of the corner of my eye at the man. Again, I was struck by the similarity of the man to a certain transvestite of my acquaintance.
Can I ask you a question, Francis?
Of course, sir.
Do you have any family living in the city?
No, sir, I do not.
He didn't elaborate, so I pressed a little.
So, where are you from, Francis?
St. Louis, sir.
Huh. You play any ball?
No, sir. The pilot will convey you to where you need to go. Good day, sir.
He opened the door and waited until I passed through, polite to a fault and as cool as a sister's kiss. After Driver's car dropped me off at my apartment, I grabbed a quick meal and then flopped into my bed for 40 winks. The clock hovered around 10 a.m. when I crawled out of bed. As I mentally ran over my conversation with Driver, nothing new surfaced. I still had to see what Toots had to say about the whole deal. I selected a couple of toys for Toots and me to play with. My old Colt went into a coat pocket. A set of brass knuckles dropped into the other. I caught a bus to Union Square and legged it up post to Taylor. No Trixie. Well, that wasn't all that unusual. The girl liked her work, which made her popular with John and his namesakes. I grabbed a coffee and a Danish from the corner store and waited. An hour passed by, still no Trixie. I decided to check with a few of her co-workers. I headed south on Taylor to Geary. No dice there, so I moved on to O'Farrell. As I passed the alley a half block from O'Farrell, I heard a noise. A quick look showed someone in an overcoat running away from the entrance. This being the area it is, that wasn't so weird. What was weird was the swarm of what looked like 6-inch bees or wasps swarming and diving at its head. I almost went into the alley when I got one of those feelings. Mama Mandolin's favorite child hadn't lived this long by ignoring instinct. I backed off. A part of me wanted to give chase, but another part of me told a different story. It said I'd just cheated death. I moved on to check the girls who hung out at O'Farrell and Geary. That corner garnered me 3 propositions to spend my money, and 3 reluctant witnesses who said they'd never heard of Trixie. My BS meter was running at top volume when I stumbled across a girl who knew I was a friend of Trixie and knew me. I had been able to get a few snippets of good info from her now and then, just like with Trixie. Kat was a redhead, but until I had started this case, I had never noticed before. Funny how the mind works sometimes. Whether she was natural or not, I didn't know and wasn't about to try to find out.
Trixie? Hon, I haven't seen Trixie since I helped her color her hair yesterday.
A sinking feeling hit my gut like a 4-pound burger.
What color?
Like mine. Red.
Giving up on the hunt for Trixie for a while, I decided to grab lunch at Fisherman's Wharf. I had just cracked open a nice big dungeness crab when a wave of noxiously familiar perfume washed over me. No.
Tony, how lovely to see you. My, you are looking hot today. What is a girl supposed to do?
Hi, Frankie. Frankie planted his behind under the stool next to mine. I should have picked a busier place.
I will have what he's having.
What are you doing down here, Frankie? The wharf isn't your normal territory. You following me?
I started to feel a bit of a burn. For some reason, Frankie's attention bothered me. A lot.
Oh, and do you have to wear so much of that stuff?
Oh, Tony, this is just kismet. A happenstance and nothing more. Actually, I had an audition. I mean, can you believe it? Moi, in the theater. And my perfume is an exclusive middle-aged fragrance.
Frankie's order of crab and sourdough arrived, and he dug in. All the femme fatale mannerisms vanished as he cracked crab and tore bread. I watched in fascination as he downed a good portion of his meal in a few seconds. What's this audition about? I signaled for a beer for myself.
Lovely idea, darling. A flagon of your best, my good man.
The attendant rolled his eyes, but the beer slid into place next to the crab.
Actually, Tony, it is for an avant-garde review.
Frankie downed half of his glass in a throw and placed a hand tipped with long, hot pink nails against his chest.
You're now part of a drag show?
For all his quirks, I couldn't picture Frankie as a Vegas-style drag queen.
Oh, silly, silly boy. But you pegged it. Yes. Moi will be the headliner as Cleopatra, the ebony queen of the desert sands.
He reached into the bag at his side and pulled out a loosely wrapped package.
Here. Tell me how I look with this.
He opened the package and placed the wig it had contained on his head. The wig was red, the same shade as Roxanne's.
Frankie, you can't be serious. Women the city over are dyeing their hair any color but red to avoid becoming the next target.
Silly, silly boy. You needn't worry. I am in no danger.
Yeah, okay. Just be careful, all right?
Ooh, you do care.
Frankie!
I worked at clearing the lipstick off my face while fending off a hug.
Can't talk now, lover. Gotta rush.
Lady Luck decided to throw me a bone as I mooched along the wharf, all the pieces of the puzzle rattling around inside my head like lottery balls. Toots's ugly mug showed itself coming out of a two-story walk-up. He saw me at the same time I saw him. He took off, pounding down Jefferson Street like the hosts of hell were on his heels. The street was loaded with tourists, and Toots took full advantage of this. He used a fat lady in sunglasses and a loud dress as an obstruction and headed south onto Leavenworth. I managed to keep sight of him as far as Francisco, but lost him when he crossed Columbus.
Hey! Watch where you're going!
I headed back to my apartment just in time to answer the phone.
Hello?
It's Monahan. Need to see you at the morgue.
Fine. Give me 45 minutes.
Good.
The toys went back into the desk, and I hit the street again. Monahan was waiting for me at the door.
You look like hell.
Nice to see you, too. What's up? I mean, since you didn't tell me why you needed to see me and all, I figure you have another redhead on a slab.
That got me two raised eyebrows before the usual sour expression settled back into place.
Good guess. Care to tell me who she is?
I'm not playing, Monahan. You tell me.
We haven't ID'd her, but from her dress, I figure she's an actual hooker this time. This is getting real old, Tony.
Cold settled into my belly. I nodded at Monahan.
Let's see her.
When Ignatova pulled back the sheet, the cold turned into a glacier. Trixie lay on the slab. Monahan watched my expression.
You know her.
Her name's... was Trixie. She liked the corner at Post and Taylor. She was good for the occasional lead. She was a good kid.
I pointed to the track marks.
She also wasn't a junkie. I'll bet you dollars to donuts that these are as phony as those on the driver twins.
Monahan regarded me. He had his own opinions about the world's oldest profession. I regarded him right back.
Trixie liked gin. Period.
Her blood also came back clean.
Yeah, right. Keep an arm on him. We'll be right up. We got lucky. A couple of beat cops nabbed Toots Garber. They've got him upstairs.
Whoever found Toots had not been gentle. I looked at the cops standing on either side of him.
We found him like this.
Yeah. Believe it or not, the guy came looking for us.
That's the God's honest truth, Lieutenant. He said a couple of heavyweights did this to him. Said he'd confess to doing the Palmetto hit if we'd bring him in.
Did he do it? Did he kill Palmetto?
With the bruising around Toots' mouth, it was a wonder he could speak at all.
Go on, I'll take it from here.
What about the gumshoe?
Scram.
Toots was in bad shape. If it were anybody else, I would have called for the paramedics, but seeing it was not one of my favorite people, I decided to enjoy the moment. Okay, so I'm not an angel. Sue me.
Hiya, Toots. How's Trix?
Hands off my prisoner, Mandolin.
Not a chance, Pat. This is the goon who knows who killed Roxanne, or even did it himself. You can lock me up when I'm done, but he's talking.
Didn't do the broad.
Monahan held Toots by both shoulders, probably to keep the thug from falling over.
What was that? Come on, Garber. You help us and we'll help you.
I didn't do the broad. Not Palmetto neither. Both Palmetto and her was face down when I saw them. He got his up close and personal. One barrel right through the back. Just like me, but I didn't do it. I told the old man about that. Told Lucchesi the same.
He went on like that for a couple of minutes. He'd done a bit of work for Lucchesi, but his primary source of money was Schultz. Whoever had worked him over had been serious about the job. Toots was known as an old-style tough. If someone had scared him, it meant they weren't just looking to put a couple of dents in his frame. When Toots finally ran down, Monahan stood there chewing on his lip. Finally, he leaned back against the wall of his office.
If the court allows even half of this, old man Schultz is in for some real hard time. Okay, Garber, you tell this to the DA, and we'll keep you healthy.
I called Lucchesi and left a message detailing the news about Toots. It guaranteed me a hefty payday, but I did not feel good about it. At current count, the killer had put 5 girls into the ground with no sign of slowing down. I poured myself a drink and collapsed into my easy chair. There had to be a solution to the puzzle. I could feel it staring me in the face as it thumbed its nose at me. I bolted awake, ready to run for the door, when I realized the phone was ringing. I had fallen asleep in the chair. Again. I seem to be doing that more often than not lately. Grabbing for the phone, I missed and knocked it onto the floor.
Son of a...
After a couple of seconds of groping, I got the receiver to my ear.
Yeah?
Is this Tony Mandolin?
Yeah? Who is this, and why are you calling at 2:30 in the morning?
Can you meet me at Roy's, like, right now? It's about Trixie.
What about Trixie?
Roy's. All right.
Roy's was a small, grubby diner tucked into the lower floor of an old brownstone nestled near the bottom of a hill, a couple of blocks from my place. My collar wasn't all that hard to spot. A couple of shaggy-haired 60s leftovers sat at the end of the counter, huddled over coffee and fries. The only other person in the diner was a tiny blonde tucked into one of the booths. It had to be her. The expression on her face and the way she kept glancing out into the street matched the fear I had heard over the phone. Her eyes widened when she saw me approach, and she shrank back slightly. I didn't blame her. I was dressed for the weather. It gets a little chilly around the bay in the wee hours, and my hat and overcoat are a bit worse for wear. My face had seen better days, too. I tried to soften things with a smile.
I'm Tony Mandolin. You were Trixie's friend, Miss...
She nodded. She still looked more like a frightened child than anything else. I sat down in the booth, facing her, and took off my hat and coat. She seemed to relax at that, which raised a couple of questions. I filed them for later. Her mouth twitched in a tentative smile.
Trixie said you looked nice.
She was a nice girl. What did you want to see me for? You said it was about Trixie.
Yeah. Do you want some coffee? It's kind of cold in here.
Hey, coffee for the lady. Okay, kid. What's this about Trixie?
Her hand trembled as she reached for the creamer. I could see bruising on the inside of her wrist. Someone, her pimp or a John, had been rough.
What's your name, kid? You know mine.
I'm not a kid.
In all honesty, you're right. No one can go through what you have and not grow up before your time. But it's obvious to anyone with eyes that you're scared. Real scared. You either saw something, or you know something, and you think I might be able to help. Am I close?
Real close, Mr. Mandolin. Real close. Yeah, I saw something. I saw Trixie die. I hid behind the phone booth next to the alley, and I saw it all.
What did you see? I can't go on calling you a kid. What's your name?
Bambi.
Glad to meet you, Bambi. Call me Tony. Mr. Mandolin is my father's name.
Pleased to meet you.
Good. Now, tell me about what you saw, Bambi. Go slow if you have to. It's all right.
Sure. Me and Trix were taking a break, you know? Things was real busy, even for a weeknight. She was showing me her new do. She got a dye job. Redhead, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, one of her regulars showed up, and I got a new one. I got back to the corner just as this big guy was walking across the street to Trixie's corner. I couldn't see his face. He had a hat pulled down that covered his forehead and an overcoat, like the one you had on.
What about his hands?
Couldn't see them either. He had on gloves.
How did it happen?
The question was likely to restart the waterworks, but it had to be asked.
He took her into an alley. She didn't want to go. That's why I followed.
The guy didn't see you?
I figured he didn't, or she wouldn't be sitting across from me.
No, I think he was too interested in Trixie. I hid behind the phone booth, like I said. He grabbed her by the hair and dragged her into the alley. She was screaming and fighting. I could see everything except his face.
Damn. What happened then?
He bit her or something, and she went all limp. Then he put her down onto the pavement and hunched over her. But there were some weird sounds, like a straw being sucked. I couldn't see what he did after that because he shifted over till he was between me and Trixie. He stayed there for a long time, almost a half hour. I waited for a couple minutes after he left, in case he came back, you know? When I checked on Trixie, she was dead.
Trixie was a good girl, Bambi. I'm sorry.
Thanks.
I pulled out a C-note and slid it across to her. Her eyes widened slightly, and she looked at me in a funny way. I shook my head.
You get yourself a ticket out of town. Go back home if you can. I don't want to have to ID you later.
I can take care of myself.
Like Trixie, right?
Yeah, just like... I mean...
She looked at the bill on the table.
Look, it's not safe for you to be around here now. You know that, or you wouldn't have called me. You also know my rep. I don't BS, and I don't play games. Take the money, Bambi. Get somewhere safe, please.
She sat there for a long moment, not moving. That's how badly this life can trap folks. Her life was in danger, and the way out was laying before her, and still she was torn. Finally, her shoulders slumped, and she scooped up the money. I leaned forward.
Want me to walk with you to the bus?
For the first time, the smile was real.
Thanks, Tony. I'd like that.
After seeing Bambi safely onto the bus, I made my way back to the corner of Post and Taylor. Bambi had said she watched the killer approach Trixie and then drag her into an alley viewable from a phone booth. The only phone booth nearby was the one just up Taylor, and an alley extended its mouth onto Taylor just after the booth. I pulled out my pocket flash and did a sweep of the alley. With the garbage trucks already having been in and out, I had little hope of finding anything, but it didn't hurt to try. As predicted, I found nothing. Well, nothing useful. I did come across a number of condoms and wrappers, the odd needle, a few empty pint bottles and paper bags, a couple of discarded shivs, and a box of old chronicles. The one on top showed a faded copy of a Farley cartoon. Bending closer to read the old strip, I smelled something familiar. Why it was familiar, I couldn't say, but I had smelled it before. Following my nose, I sniffed around the box, trying to center in on the source of the smell. I kept one eye on the phone booth. If I lost sight of it, then I had moved out of the area where Bambi saw the attack. The scent grew stronger just beyond the box. I focused the beam of my flash in that direction. Another stack of papers lay crumpled up against the alley wall. Holding the light steady, I pulled them aside, one at a time. As I pulled the last one away, the smell struck me like a sledgehammer. It came from an uncapped black glass perfume bottle. I pulled out my pen and slid it into the bottle's mouth. The inscription stood out in the light of my flash, silver against the black.
Trebuchet. Huh.
A slight misspelling of the name for an early type of catapult, but I could see why the makers of the perfume chose the name. The stuff packed a wallop. The bottle went into a pocket, and I headed back to bed. Compiling clues could be done at a later, more wide awake time of day. I got my typical wake-up call right in the middle of a dream.
What?
I answered the door with my small bat in my right hand instead of the large one. Actually, it's an old police truncheon, but it does the job.
Who is it?
Open up, lover. It's me.
I leaned my forehead against the wall.
Frankie.
What in the world would bring Frankie to my door at the crack of dawn? I looked at my watch. 11 a.m. Close enough to dawn for my tastes.
What is it, Frankie?
Something terrible has happened, Tony. Please open the door.
What? You broke a nail?
Tony!
All right, hold your water.
Frankie rushed right past me and into the kitchen, trailing an almost visible trail of perfume. I could see he was bothered. He looked like a meth head holding one too many hits. He started pacing, wringing a lace hanky in his hands.
Terrible.
What's going on, Frankie? What's terrible?
My world is tumbling down around me, Tony, like flower petals in the fall.
What's going on?
He looked down at me through 2-inch fake eyelashes.
You know I am a social person, don't you, Tony?
Yeah.
Well, with all of this going on with the killings, you know, I decided to check on the girls to see if they were okay.
What girls?
You know, the girls. Trixie, Molly, Felicia, Veronica, and Bambi.
Oh, those girls. Why was Frankie talking like he was... I looked at Frankie again and then sent my mind to the soap dispenser. We are not going to go there.
I'm afraid I have no idea what you're talking about, Frankie.
Over the years, I've gotten to be real close with a few... ladies of the evening, if you know what I mean.
But I thought...
No, not that way, silly. No, I mean close, as in girl talk close.
Wait a second. You aren't pimping, are you, Frankie? That isn't why you're so concerned about Bambi, is it?
Oh, of course not. I mean, what sort of girl do you think I am, really?
He crossed his arms in a huff and turned away from me, his nose in the air. I let him stew. One of the things Frankie likes better than tight little red dresses and gallons of perfume is a good excuse for a display of offended temper. The huff didn't last long.
That would be something, though, wouldn't it? Moi, a purveyor of coital delicti?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, something. You needn't worry about Bambi, Frankie. She's all right.
Oh, you know where she is. Oh, I have been so worried. Here, tell Frankie all about it.
There isn't much to tell. I put her onto a bus back to her old hometown, and that's it.
You sent her home?
Frankie's eyes bulged for just an instant, and then a broad smile split his face. He looked down at me and shook his head.
Tony, 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 what am I going to do with you? You are such an old softy.
I backed away. His perfume was beginning to make my eyes water.
What? I did the girl a favor, and you know it. She had no business down on that corner, and that could have been her as easily as it was Trixie.
Frankie looked sideways at me out of slitted eyes.
Tony, such passion. Were you two,
Give me a break. She was a friend and a good source of street info. You know I don't mix business with recreation. Besides, she couldn't have been more than 16.
Of course not, my white knight. Oh, Bambi was always a country girl at heart, even though I never learned where she came from in our little chats. I mean, the girl was always so close with her personals, you know?
Doesn't matter. She's safe. I just gave her the money. She bought the ticket.
Oh, me. A wasted tantrum. Oh, well. One hopes she'll be happy.
He reached out and patted my cheek.
Ta-ta, lover. You are such a kind person. Not good at all for juicy gossip, but a softy through and through.
Yeah, yeah. See you later, Frankie. Frankie's perfume required opening every window to the outside in the hopes that the fog outside would wash it away. But I was sure I would have to call in a cleaning service. Good thing Mrs. Mandolin's little boy was flush with cash for once. I headed downtown to see Monahan again.
What the hell are you doing here, Mandolin?
The desk sergeant asked me the same thing, only he wasn't as pleasant. Gave me a snarky sort of look, too.
I'm not surprised.
Okay, Pat, what's going on? He didn't answer. He just gave me a look and shook his head. Now, I was worried. What's going on? You're acting like I'm a guy who's just been told he has just a few days to live. The change in his expression said it all. I sat down.
Who is it?
Rorsch. Lucchesi made a couple of calls to City Hall. Even the chief wouldn't step in to protect his badge after that. He's blaming you for his suspension and telling everyone who listened that he's gonna take you out if it's the last thing he does. Most of us believe him.
And he's not in a cell where he belongs because...
Because there's enough uniforms in this department who aren't sure who they dislike most, you or Rorsch. That's why.
I could guess the rest. So, the captain had you take his gun and badge, and after he finished with his threats, the whole bunch of you stood there and let that fine example of manhood walk out unmolested.
Not entirely. Sergeant Hood stopped him at the door and made him give us his ankle piece. Even Rorsch isn't stupid enough to swing on Hood.
You still haven't told me why Rorsch is walking around instead of cooling his heels while waiting for arraignment. There are wise guys with cleaner records. Oh, you can't find him, can you?
He's being looked for. These things take time.
Yeah, sure. All the while, Rorsch has had time to make a few contacts, replace both his pieces, and perhaps pick up the latest in sniper rifles. I probably won't know I'm dead until the angels tell me.
Who said anything about angels where you're concerned?
Ha ha, why don't you quit your day job, Pat? You're a riot, a real killer.
Monahan reached into his desk and pulled out a bottle of aspirin.
Look, Tony, we're looking for the slug, but until we find him, you gotta stay out of sight. Also...
He swallowed the pills dry and then waved his hand like he was batting at a fly.
Forget it.
What?
I said forget it. I don't know what I was thinking.
What?
All right. Maybe, and I didn't say this, you can have a certain client of yours watch your back, since he doesn't care much for Rorsch anyway.
We both knew who that certain client was, and for the briefest of moments I actually considered making the call. The feeling of having a tiny ruby spot focused between your shoulder blades will do that to you.
I stood up, reached across the desk, and did something I had never done in all the years I'd known him. I patted Monahan on the shoulder.
Thanks, Pat, but I think I'll handle this one on my own. Rorsch is hunting in my forest now.
Tony, I'm still a cop, remember?
I smiled.
Don't worry, I won't leave any bodies.